At any rate, for the next 2 hours, we'll be indulging in our favorite pastime, news talk here on KSCO. And as I've often mentioned and will mention again, the program improves when you participate. So what I'm going to ask you to do, please, is get your dialing finger ready, or I guess I'm giving my age away there. I guess nowadays it's your button-punching finger that it takes to make the telephone work. Our number here is 479-1080. And the sooner we get some calls from you and get them on the air, the better off we'll be. Except, of course, I want to open the program by setting the agenda here, saying a few words about what I'm prepared to speak about and what I think we ought to talk about today. If you've been cognizant at all, you understand that a new Congress has just convened and that for the first time in 12 years, the Democratic Party holds the majority in the House of Representatives. The new Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, the first Californian to hold that post. Everybody's making a big deal about her being the first woman to do it. I don't know, maybe I'm prejudiced. I don't think that's such a big deal anymore. Women are obviously everywhere in American society doing all sorts of jobs. There was a time when I was much younger when the first woman to do something really, you know, that was big news. Nowadays, I don't think it's that much of a milestone anymore, since women have been so obviously and completely and properly accepted into every walk of American society. Will we have a woman president someday? Of course we will. I don't know who it's going to be, but we will. We've had our first Catholic president. One of these days we'll have our first Jewish president, our first black president, all that. When it happens, it's going to be an anticlimax. She is the first Californian, and as a Californian, I'm rather proud of that. But more to the point, what does it mean for American policies and American politics? Like to discuss the two big eyes today. One of them is Iraq, and the other is immigration, because these are the two big issues that this Congress is going to have to deal with. There are others, I will grant you, but these two are the ones that engage the most public attention. And for, I think, very good reasons. Now, so far as Iraq is concerned, we've seen some interesting developments lately. We saw the Iraq Study Group come back and basically present a document that didn't say an awful lot. It was primarily a kind of a rehash of the same things we've been hearing out of various administration figures for the past 3 years. There was nothing in it that pointed a way to victory in Iraq. There were proposals for talking with people who wish us ill, specifically the Syrians and the Iranians, but very little in the way of here's what we can do to bring this thing to a successful conclusion. Mr. Bush is interested in bringing it to a successful conclusion, and it looks as if now he will probably, we don't know that for sure yet since he hasn't spoken yet, but he will probably recommend a surge in troop levels with the idea of once and for all actually doing what we should have done 3 years ago, mainly bringing security to the Baghdad area and enabling the Iraqi government to take over functions which, you know, by this time all this should have been done. So anybody who wants to call up and rake George W. Bush over the coals for having administered this whole thing ridiculously badly, I'll agree with you. We won't have a fight on that. But where we might have a fight is, where do we go from here? That's a great old World War I tune. Where do we go from here? It appears that Ms. Pelosi is now beginning to throw down a gauntlet on this. In today's San Francisco Chronicle, which I hold here, piece that says, Pelosi warns Bush it's time to cut troops. And Mrs. Pelosi has now made a statement. She came back to San Francisco and gave an interview to her hometown newspaper, The Chronicle, and that's what's published here. She warns that the new Congress is not interested in an escalation. She defines a surge as an escalation, which is a reasonable definition, I think, so I'm not going to give her a bad time on that. And she said that would get a cold reception in the new Democratic-led House. She is saying, in essence, we are going to exercise more oversight. She has not said, as a matter of fact, she has definitely said she will not cut off funding for our troops. The Democratic majority, according to Speaker Pelosi, will not go there. What they do want is to exercise additional influence over policy through their oversight function. And specifically, so far as funding is concerned, what language did she use? The way it comes out, somebody said surging forces is a strategy that you have already tried and that has failed. That isn't true. It hasn't been tried, and it should be, I think. But, you know, that's my personal opinion. Obviously, Ms. Pelosi and many of her Democrats don't agree with that. Essentially, what Ms. Pelosi is saying here is that her majority will fund a defeat in Iraq, but they won't fund a victory. Now, that's the way I'm putting it. And you may think I'm being pejorative about this. Actually, I'm not, because one thing Mr. Bush has continually said is defeat is not an option. Well, he's wrong about that. He's wrong about that. Because now, Ms. Pelosi and Harry Reid and these other people are putting defeat on the table as an option. Now, I don't like that, but nevertheless, it's a perfectly legitimate thing to do. And at this point, for an American to stand up and say, I think we should accept defeat and withdraw from Iraq, is a reasonable policy statement to make. It's one I disagree with, but it's a reasonable policy statement to make. And for Mr. Bush to say, well, defeat is not an option, I'm sorry, he's whistling past a graveyard. Defeat is very much an option and is going to be discussed and debated. And defeat is one of the things that we need to look at as a possible future. Now, if you'll listen to my voice, I'm not being pejorative about this. I'm not saying if you recommend defeat, you're not a patriot or any nonsense like that. Forget about that. What I am saying, and I think is very reasonable to say, is if you are going to advocate accepting a defeat in Iraq, you must look at the implications of that and what it means. In 1975, when we had essentially successfully concluded our involvement in Vietnam, we pulled our troops out in 74. And there were no Americans fighting in Vietnam in 75 when the North Vietnamese tore up the agreement and invaded the country in violation of the agreements they had signed at Paris that brought our involvement in Vietnam to an end. The Congress at that time refused to exercise our option under that treaty and fund the South Vietnamese effort to repel this invasion. And as a result, South Vietnam fell, and we saw the consequences of that. I've often pointed out to people the real killing in Southeast Asia did not begin until after we left. War kills people by thousands. It's only a programmed plan of genocide that kills people by millions, which is what happened in Cambodia in the killing fields, which is what happened in Vietnam with the re-education camps and the boat people simply putting out to sea in boats hoping that somehow seawater would be better than where they were. So there were consequences of our defeat in Vietnam, but those consequences were not visited so much on us. They were visited on a lot of other people of another race that we didn't care about. Now, there are examples where things went the other way. In 1973, the Yom Kippur War, when the Egyptians in particular came down on the Israelis, actually forced the Israeli army back for the first time in history, President Nixon took the decision to resupply the Israelis. It's what led to the first gasoline or oil embargo against the West by the Arab oil-producing nations. But the point being here that the decision was taken to go ahead with aid and resupply. After all, the Soviets were resupplying the Egyptians and the Syrians. So we prevented a debacle in Israel by stepping up and providing them the tools that they needed to stave off that attack and turn the tide. So we've seen what happens when we step up and when we don't step up. And now it looks as if Ms. Pelosi and her Democrats are saying, we will provide funding for a drawdown of American forces, but we are not going to provide funding for an attempt at victory. Now, that's a very important distinction. So, once again, defeat is on the table as an option. It is a reasonable, logical option that should be discussed. I am against it, but that doesn't mean it's illegitimate. So far as immigration is concerned, here is where I see an opportunity for the new Congress and the president to actually do some good work. Those of you who have listened to me on this radio station before know that I do not share the Tom Tancredo approach of simply build an 18-foot fence with barbed wire and broken glass on top and man it with people with submachine guns every 15 feet and dogs. That won't do the job. We need a guest worker program. And I am sick and tired of being told when I say this that I am in favor of amnesty. I'll tell you what I'm in favor of in words of one syllable. I am in favor of what we had when I was young. I am in favor of what we had up until 1965, when Lyndon Johnson got rid of it. I am in favor of something, you can call it the Bracero program in those days. Nowadays, they're calling it a guest worker program. You can call it what you want, but that is exactly what we need. Because we need labor. We need that manpower. There is no question in my mind of that. Here's something else in the paper today, if you don't believe me on that. December employment growth strong. Unemployment stays at 4.5%. Country adds 167,000 jobs in December. When unemployment is under 5% in this country, we are in a situation of basically full employment. There are always that many people between jobs, changing jobs, you know, decided I'm going to quit for a while, whatever. So right now, in spite of all the people who are in our country, many of them illegally, we managed to come up with a 4.5% unemployment rate. We are not swimming in excess manpower. We need guest workers. What we need to do is impose some kind of control on this. And instead of having people just come over the border willy-nilly illegally, nobody that I know of is in favor of that. I've never spoken with a reasonable person who supports what we are doing now and what we have been doing for the past few years. To just have no enforcement at all of our immigration laws, act like they don't exist, and make our country the dumping ground for the Mexican government to dispose of its excess humanity. And this is one thing about Mexico that absolutely infuriates me. It is the policy, the official policy of the Mexican government to export surplus labor to the United States illegally. They even print up brochures showing people how to get over the fences and how to get around the border guards. And they call themselves good neighbors? I'm sorry. Of course, the one thing the Mexican government could do to really help the problem would be to embark upon needed and long overdue reforms, thus making Mexico, which is a fundamentally wealthy country, thus making Mexico a country where Mexicans can live and grow and progress and have a future. But I'll tell you what, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm a fundamentally optimistic person, but after having watched the performance of Mexico over decades, I believe that anyone who thinks that Mexico is ever going to be anything other than a toilet is whistling in the dark. Mexico is a toilet and will remain a toilet, and we have to deal with that. And sane, reasonable, responsible, ambitious Mexicans who don't like living in a toilet are going to be fighting like hell to get in here. And I can't blame them. They want a life. They're human beings. So what we have to do, instead of yelling and screaming and acting like a bunch of, I don't know what, just irrational people, what we have to do is confront the situation as it is and come up with policies that are going to address it to our advantage. And those policies will inevitably work to the advantage of people who want to come here, do work, and earn money. It's, in this overused phrase that you hear all the time nowadays, a win-win situation, provided we handle it right. Now, those are the issues we're going to talk about today, ladies and gentlemen, Iraq and immigration. And so far as immigration is concerned, I think this new Congress and President Bush will probably work together fairly well. So far as Iraq is concerned, I think they're probably headed for a collision course. For right now, what I'm going to do is open up the telephones. We're going to start with Harold in Aptos, and we've got other calls on the line, so we'll try to move these out with a reasonable degree of alacrity. Harold, good morning, and thank you for calling KSCO.
Okay. Okay, Charlie. Now, you basically live in the North Monterey County area of this world, Prunedale area, so forth. You don't live in Watsonville.
I live in the big town, Watsonburg.
Watsonville.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, your basic flaw in your immigration argument is the immigrants, a lot of them illegal working in the fields, have left the fields and moved into industry and construction, and more poor Mexicans are coming in to take the field work. So there's a basic flaw in that argument. Do you want a response?
I don't see it as a flaw in the argument. I know that what you're talking about is true. There's no question in my mind of that. On the other hand, what you're describing functions to keep wage levels lower, thereby making housing more affordable and benefiting American consumers.
Okay, and part two, you and I know that the greatest conqueror ever was Genghis Khan.
Not interested in talking about Genghis Khan today.
Okay, the point was that he conquered that area that was Islam and Baghdad, and right after his death, within 50 years, it reverted back to Islam. So you have a very powerful force in here against an American force that the president is now saying, I see light at the end of the tunnel. Let's surge. And all the major polls say, get out. The American people are against it. You have a 30% approval rating, and George Bush thinks he's a king.
You know, Harold, I'm glad you brought up that point. Let's talk about that for a moment or two. President Bush's approval rating is about 32%. You are correct about that. Mr. Bush does not think he is a king. That is hyperbole and nonsense, and we'll just let that sit aside for a while. But let's talk about that amount of people who disapprove of the way the president is handling Iraq. Some of those people want us to pull out. I understand that. But I'm submitting to you that not all of them want us to pull out. I think there are a significant number of people who disapprove of Mr. Bush's performance. I would give you myself as an example, who want victory and who are concerned because we have seen President Bush over the past 3 years dithering and blithering and not winning this war. And I think that Mr. Bush's policy of actually having a strategy for victory rather than stay the course. I notice we haven't heard that out of his mouth for a while, that stay the course nonsense. If we have a strategy for victory, I believe you will see his approval numbers go up as people like me, who are not interested in defeat,
okay,
once again swing to support.
Charlie, it all depends on who writes in to Congress this weekend. I supported the president for the first 2 or 3 years of the war for various reasons, but now I think he should be impeached, and here's my reasons why. High crimes and misdemeanor, bribery and corruption. What the Democrats are going to do, they're going to go after the government contracts. He did not bid out. He gave it to Halliburton. Billions of dollars are missing. Did Bush know there were no weapons of mass destruction? He's going to have to answer that question.
Well, that's been long since settled.
Now, they're going to try to impeach him on that. And also, he wants to open citizens' mail, no habeas corpus, throw anybody in jail he wants to.
That's not true.
You realize,
of course, all that is not true.
Now, that's what they're going to try to impeach him on. You're a Bush loyalist, and I appreciate that.
I'm not really.
I'm in the middle.
As I said, I'm right now a Bush critic. I would consider myself a Bush critic on a number of things.
I'm not willing to go to the extreme of
charging him with things that I know he's not guilty of.
Okay, one thing that bothered me, Charlie, is how he immediately jetted the Saudi royal family out of New York right after the 9/11 tragedy and
you know who handled that?
Cheney or the
No. The guy who handled that was the guy. Oh, geez, I can't remember his name now. But he emerged about 6 months
Richard
later.
Richard Helms.
No. Gosh, is he still alive?
He was
CIA director back in the 70s. You're almost as old as I am.
You said Helms, but you didn't give me a first name. So we'll give it to the audience.
I didn't say Helms. I said I'm trying to think of the guy. His first name was Richard, but his last name isn't Helms. His first it was some guy who about 6 months later became a really strong Bush critic and started, blathering all over the newspapers about how awful everything was. But he was the one who spirited the bin Laden family out of the United States. And incidentally, the bin Laden family, many of them are in fear of their lives from Al-Qaeda. Osama is you want to talk about a black sheep of a family? He has told those people many times, those people, his family, that so far as he's concerned, they're enemies of Islam.
Yeah.
And
the reason that they
were gotten out of the country is because they were in fear of their lives.
Okay, now Al-Qaeda to me is a sect of Islam. Islam is a billion not strong. They're disunited. So Al-Qaeda is just a sect to me as a historian. But he wants, the last thing I'm worried about here, Mr. President, after 5 or 6 years after the 9/11 disaster, why are you not securing the U.S.-Mexican border? Did you sell out the economic interest? And I'd ask him right to his face on that. And the last thing, what he should have said, American people, we must stay in this area so Americans have access to oil. We want to promote democracy against Islam. We want to rebuild the infrastructure, which they're not doing, just a little bit. And we want to protect the only democracy in the area, Israel. Bam! His approval ratings will go up. Why isn't he saying those things, Charlie?
That's a good question. That's a good question. That's one of the things I'm so critical about.
Our audience is very wise, so let's see what they come up with.
Okay, thanks
for
the call.
Sir.
Appreciate it. Harold always has... He's an interesting caller. I've talked with him many times now. He has some things that are just from outer space, and then he has an awful lot of stuff that makes tremendous sense. The questions he just asked about why Mr. Bush, for example, didn't address the immigration issue far earlier in his term... I have seen President Bush made so many political mistakes and policy mistakes. You want an example, that Medicare prescription drug benefit that he put through that doesn't seem to be doing that much good for many people, but it sure has, as hell has, cost the government a lot of money. The fact that he never took action against the congressional earmark thing, or for that matter, never vetoed any of the spending bills they sent him that were larded with all kinds of pork, etc. If it would have been me, I'd have been sending those bills back the way you'd send back an overcooked steak. But I don't know. I just don't know. So, you know, when Harold says that I'm an apologist for Mr. Bush, I'm sorry. I'm not ready to accept that completely. Larry in Aptos, you are up next. Thank you very much for calling the radio station, KSCO.
Yeah, you forgot the second part just now. And also that pharmaceutical bill has put millions and millions more dollars into the coffers of the pharmaceutical corporations. It's made them richer. But that's not really what I wanted to...
Well, look, anything that pays for drugs automatically, per se, buys things from drug companies. So what you've just pointed out is kind of like pointing out that water is wet or that
the
sun shines.
Well, it's just that it was sort of like a tax, sort of like corporate welfare for corporations there.
Hey, didn't I just say that I was against it?
I know, and I'm glad you are. That's great. I want to talk about Iraq, though, because
hang on, just one quick second. Somebody just called in and said, the guy's name that I was looking for who got the Bin Laden family out here, Richard Clark. I knew it was Richard something, Richard Clark.
Yeah.
I just wanted to interject that. I apologize for interrupting you. Please go ahead.
He was he's a State Department guy and working in the Bush administration at that time. About Iraq, we had our war. We got rid of the government and Saddam Hussein.
That took 3 weeks.
And since then, it's been an occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And
a very poorly administered one.
And as far as I'm concerned, you know, that was the victory right there. I don't know what victory is. I'd like somebody to explain to me, what is victory going to look like? Because we've occupied this country, and just as any colonial power, the British in India...
Before you get into this big dissertation, let me answer your question. What victory will look like is when you don't see this situation of sectarian violence going on a daily basis. What victory will look like is when the Iraqi government actually controls the country and administers the government, like, you know, governments do in other countries. That's what victory will look like. It's not very far-fetched. Right now, the problem is we have, and this is where you and I would agree, we've taken all the wrong steps and all the wrong ways to go about securing this.
Well, I disagreed with the war in the first place because, A, Iraq had no Air Force, no Navy, and as Ron Paul, Republican from Texas, said, they weren't a threat. They couldn't have attacked us. So, that's number one. I mean, I think going into Afghanistan and having Osama bin Laden cornered and then deciding right there, let's go after Iraq. That was the first mistake right there, because we had Iraq contained. We could fly jets over that country 24/7, and they couldn't do anything. You know, the northern part was basically controlled by the Kurds. And by the way, that's where Zarqawi was hiding out.
Right, and when that's why when I say that when people tell me that Saddam Hussein had no connections with international terrorism, that is the most ludicrous.
Wait, excuse me. He was in the north in the Kurdish-controlled area.
Kurdish-controlled. Okay? Do you think anybody but Saddam Hussein controlled? I mean,
he didn't control that.
He
no.
did indeed.
He did, no, you're
he
wrong.
Did it. No,
you
I'm
wrong.
No,
and
I'm not wrong.
What? The
you know what? The,
is,
the Kurds
did not
were
controlled the northern area
okay.
of Iraq.
Hang
the
on.
Kurds
were... Okay. Before you annoy me too much, Saddam Hussein used chemical weapons against Kurds in the aftermath of the first Gulf War, just as he used chemical weapons against Shia in the south. To say that the Kurds controlled their area in the north of Iraq is ludicrous. And if you would, I'd like to see you go to Mosul and tell the Kurds that.
He couldn't do anything there. He couldn't send armies up there or anything. That was the area that was flown over by American and British jets 24/7.
Yeah, we flew over, and what did we do? We flew over, and what did we do?
We made sure that he couldn't move armies in there. He couldn't have anything in there.
I'm
there
sorry, you're incorrect.
On that.
You're incorrect.
Well, look, I don't want to talk about that. That's
okay, but you look, you raised the point. Now, look, we did fly over. You're correct. We did not drop any bombs. We did not shoot any guns. Rather, instead, we got shot at, and we actually lost some planes on those flyover missions. And you're telling me we exerted control? I'm sorry. We did not exert control.
I agree with what Ron Paul said. They couldn't have sent any ships over here or planes over here.
No, they couldn't
have. And attacked us. That they weren't a threat.
What they could have done and what they were perfectly capable of doing was sponsoring acts of terror against us. And that was the whole focus of the post-9/11 program.
They had nothing to do with September 11th.
No, they did not. They had nothing
to do. Saudi Arabia had something to do with that.
They had nothing to
do
with September 11th. I agree with that. To say that they were not connected with international terrorism is ludicrous.
Until there actually could have been an attack on Americans.
Oh, so we have to wait for that,
100% proof that it was Saddam Hussein. Otherwise, to attack that country, now we've caused all these people to be against us there because we've invaded their country, we've occupied their country. A lot of those Iraqis were saying after we got rid of Saddam Hussein, good, you got rid of him. Now get out of here. Leave us alone.
What we should have done when we got rid of him was to have established order and security in that country,
yeah,
and that's
Gardner
where our big failure
for
was.
That. Jay Gardner had a plan for that. You know what? Bush got him out of there real fast.
Jay Gardner?
Yeah.
Who was Gardner?
He was a general who was sent there. He was actually a retired general who was sent there in the first place. He was replaced by J. Paul Bremer.
Oh, I remember Bremer.
About 3 months.
You're telling me that Gardner had a plan for imposing martial law and actually...
He had a plan on getting the... He didn't want the Iraqi army dissolved. He wanted to keep the Baathists in. He wanted to vet the Baathists. He was just on PBS talking about this.
I'm sorry I missed it. From the sound of it...
Well, I'm sure you did, too, because
you
know more right now.
You see, Larry,
he wanted to vet the Baathists to find out who he could rely on to keep... He really hated it when the American army basically stood down and let Baghdad get looted by the crooks.
See, this is something now, Larry, that you and I can agree on. This was a terrible botch job on the part of the United States. What I hadn't realized was that there was this Gardner fellow who was telling him about it at the time and trying to do something about it.
Yeah, well, you should know about Jay Gardner.
I should.
Google it and find out. And you know what? Here's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Bush botched this operation so badly, and he brings in J. Paul Bremer, all these corporate people, and that's what they thought. They were just going to go in there and rip the place off, which basically is what they did because, you know, billions of dollars start going missing right away. They start handing out money to people who shouldn't have been given contracts in the first place, you know, bringing over Blackwater, bringing over Khaki. And then what does Blackwater do? They hire people who used to work for Pinochet or for the apartheid government in South Africa, these thugs. You know, this is our American dollars going to pay to people who were, you know, like death squad guys in their countries. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but I am really, really so angry at George Bush
and the corporate thievery that's going on.
Well, I'll tell you, Larry, I'm angry at him for other reasons, but I don't see the corporate thievery. What I see is incompetence in administering an occupation. But listen, I got to move on. I got other people
killing,
on the phones.
And the killing of innocent Iraqis.
I got other people on the phones, and I need to take a break, so I need to move on. But
okay.
I want to thank you for calling, and you had some good points to make. I appreciate it.
I appreciate what you just said.
Have a great day. This is KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Charlie Friedman on the Saturday special. We have some calls on the line. We also have some open lines at 479-1080. You can talk about Iraq or immigration, where we are right now, where the new Congress might want to take us. Right now, we're going to take a break. I'll be right back with you. Ha-ha, fool Dave.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangerl. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangerl family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Howard Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
This is Judy DeVilbiss. Hi, you know what? Back in about March of this year, I actually took a flying leap off of my bicycle and landed right square on my knees and my chest. Thank God I didn't hit my head, but I did really rack up my knee big time. And you know what I did? I didn't go to the doctor. I just came home and started with ice packs, the essential oils, the trauma oil, and every day I rubbed a lot of the CM cream from Youngevity. I'm telling you what, the Youngevity products are something that can really take care of you. I did this regime probably straight for 4 weeks, and every day I was taking 3 of the CM capsules 3 times a day. I took care of myself, and you know what? Here it is now, and it did take a while, I'll admit, because, hey, you know what? I'm 66 years old. But you know what? I'm back on the bicycle, I'm running races, and I'm feeling great. Get started on the Youngevity products. Call 888-352-7500. Thanks.
Your electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. Hello, I'm Priscilla Christie of Direct Electric.
And I'm Dave Christie. Whether your problem is a light switch, breaker box, meter main, or anything in between, Direct Electric technicians will fix it right the first time for the right price. And here's the best part. Direct Electric will not bill you for a service call.
I don't think they heard you, Dave. You better tell them again.
Okay. Direct Electric will not charge you for a service call.
And if you have an electrical emergency, call Direct Electric at 425-1407. I'll rouse Dave and he'll come running.
Priscilla is right. If you have a real electrical emergency, the kind that just can't wait till morning, call Direct Electric and we will come running.
Remember, your electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. I will take your call.
And I will make certain that your problem gets fixed. Call Direct Electric at 425-1407. That's 425-1407.
Buongiorno, property owners. When you need to clean up your property, call on the professionals at Coyote Industrial Cleaning. I'm Bob Farmer, but my friends call me Mr. Clean because I'm the one that cleans up downtown Santa Cruz. When you need to clean up your sidewalks, patios, driveways, pool areas, decks, buildings, and carpets, give us a ring at Coyote Industrial Cleaning, 429-5521. That's 429-5521. Or at Bob Farmer in the Santa Cruz White Pages.
The world is changing daily. Old familiar views don't seem to work anymore, and that's why there's Embassy of the New World Order, the one and only foreign affairs radio broadcast, where all politics are global, Sundays at 11 a.m. Greetings and salutations. I'm Cyril Vatomsky, your progressive multicultural ambassador of the New World Order, and I am here to offer you tools and information to better navigate through murky waters of international politics. I will gladly listen to your opinions and will be happy to tell you where you are wrong. Join me for the free weekly foreign affairs seminar, The Embassy of the New World Order, Sundays at 11 a.m. on KSCO.
On the next Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, this is Ian Punnett. Join me Saturday night for Coast to Coast Live. I'll have another fascinating and extremely in-depth guest interview. We may talk about UFOs, the paranormal, or maybe even some strange stuff. You never know what you'll hear, but that's one more reason to tune in to Coast Live.
This Saturday from 6 to 10 on AM 1080 KSCO. Don't miss Coast to Coast AM.
And you're listening to the Saturday Special on KSCO. I'm Charlie Friedman. We have callers on the line, so let's get right to them. Richard in Watsonville, you're up next. Thank you for calling KSCO.
Hey, Charlie.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. You know that you were talking earlier with Larry there about that northern and southern no-fly zone not being effective.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It was extremely effective.
You think so? I don't.
Well, it was called a northern and southern no-fly zone, Charlie.
Okay, well, what
Nobody flew in and flew out, okay?
Well, what it did was keep Saddam out of the air. Yes, you're right. I agree with that.
Okay.
Now, but it had nothing to do. We didn't interfere with the thing he was doing on the ground up to and including using chemical warfare against his own people.
Look, they used chemical warfare on the Iranians.
They
man.
Did. They
Forget
did,
Forget about the north and the south. Look what they did to the Iranians.
You know,
we gave them that gas.
You know, that brings to mind something.
We gave them that gas, Charlie.
At that time, we were allied with Saddam Hussein.
That was Reagan's era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, things were different then.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the Shah of Iran.
I would remind you.
Marcos was running around the Pacific.
Richard,
was a nut house.
Richard, I would remind you that for several years we were allied with Joseph Stalin. The idea that we would be allied with somebody and then find ourselves later on at odds with them, I mean, that's what happens.
Charlie, I ain't going to make up history about the dude, though.
I'm not making up history about anybody. I know damn well we were allied with Saddam Hussein at one time.
The no-fly zone was perfect. The eastern and western no-fly zone would have been better. The only way you're going to get out of Iraq is through martial law. And this time next week, we're going to be talking about martial law in Tijuana. I don't know if you know about this or not, history teacher, but every policeman, every highway patrolman, every deputy, every sheriff down there in Tijuana is turning in their weapons right now. I don't know if you know that or not.
Question, are you talking about Americans or Mexicans?
Mexicans. They're going to martial law in Tijuana right as we're speaking, man.
Mm-hmm. Why?
And they're bringing in the military because some coyotes went and overran a United States reserve encampment in Arizona or New Mexico, somewhere along the border.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't have any weapons. So they've got weapons now. So now the Mexican government is amassing troops along the border. And they're starting with Tijuana, which is just fine with me. They need to do it here, Charlie.
You know, I'll
when
tell you,
if
the Mexican government is actually going to start being part of the solution instead of part of the problem, then I'll have to eat some of what I said earlier in the program.
You've been looking like a Democrat all morning long, man. You've been sounding like a liberal. I wish you'd actually bring my old teacher back, Gene Patterson, your buddy.
Oh, I remember. He lives up in the Sierra foothills now.
I'd love to take both of you guys on, man. It would be fun.
Well, you'd probably break us both in half. We're old men. Listen, take it easy.
Take care of yourself. Have a good New Year.
Thanks for calling, Richard, and I appreciate that. You have a good New Year yourself. Okay, we still have calls on the line. I'm going to clear these lines out. If you want to get on the radio program, it's 479-1080, and we're making progress on this. Thor in Monterey, thank you for calling KSCO.
Hi, Charlie. Good morning. First, I want to start off with that I'm pretty conservative. I'm registered currently with the Republicans, although I'm pretty disappointed with the Republican Party. But I want to start off with saying I pretty much agree with Harold, at least in the area, saying that Bush should be probably impeached.
Okay. Two things. First of all, on the subject of being a Republican and like that, it's kind of like being in a long-term marriage. Occasionally, I get unhappy with the party, too. On the other hand, I realize that in American politics, if you want to get something accomplished, the way to do it is through the mechanism of one of the two great major political parties. This is how things are done. And so that is why in the Republican Party we have such diverse groups as the Christian right that I'm definitely not a part of.
Yeah, me too.
We have the libertarian right, which is where I basically come from. We have, the business people, and we have the social conservatives and et cetera. And, of course, the Democratic Party is likewise made up of these various constituency groups, some of whom don't like each other. But it's an avenue to get things done. Now, you talked about Bush being impeached.
Yep.
And we've had a couple of people talk about that. The constitutional definition of impeachment, high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, when Mr. Clinton committed perjury, that was not regarded by the American people as a sufficiently high crime or misdemeanor. What do you think Mr. Bush has done to merit impeachment?
Essentially, leaving us vulnerable to terrorist attack by ignoring the problem with the borders. And
terrorist attack didn't come over the Mexican border.
No, but the next one probably will.
It's conceivable it might. On the other hand, Mr. Bush, I would remind you, Mr. Bush has already signed legislation tightening up border security and building fences, etc. I would also remind you of one other thing. Neither Mr. Bush nor Mr. Clinton nor Senior Bush nor back to Ronald Reagan, nobody for years has done anything about this.
Yeah,
and so to now all of a sudden land in George W. Bush's lap seems to me to be just a bit unfair.
Because September...
Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay, good.
September 11th happened on Bush's watch, so that changed the whole picture. I mean, before September 11th happened, he was talking about having amnesty for illegals from Mexico, and then he had to revise it, saying, maybe we'll have to include people from other countries, too, because there's such a huge uproar.
In all fairness, I never heard the word amnesty come out of his mouth. I'll tell you why. We already had an experience with that. Back in 1987 or 88, Senator Alan Simpson and Congressman Romano Mazzoli from Louisville, Kentucky, got together and sponsored a bill called the Simpson-Mazzoli Act. The subject of this was immigration reform.
Mm-hmm.
Today, anybody looking back on that from the standpoint of 20 years has to say that it was an absolute fiasco. It did amount to an amnesty. As a matter of fact, it specifically was an amnesty. It said to people who were in the United States by such and such a date, you're legal, you're in. That is amnesty. That's what that's what the word means. You're just, all is forgiven.
Kind of a pejorative word at this point, so they're looking for other ways of saying it.
It should be a pejorative word because we've already had experience with it and we understand that it does not work. Therefore, there is no one in public discourse that I have heard who is proposing amnesty. I am certainly not. Mr. Bush is certainly not. Did you hear the beginning of the program, sir?
Yes.
Did you hear me say that what I want is what we had back in the 50s and early 60s.
Yeah, but they're a program.
That's what I want, and that was not amnesty.
Bush definitely wants some kind of guest worker program.
We have to have it. It's essential.
I am somewhat skeptical about that because they say that they want to have these guest workers come in and do the jobs that Americans aren't willing to do, but they leave the important part off of the end of that is the jobs that Americans are not willing to do for that low wage. So I'm a little concerned about the guest worker program if it's not really tight enough, or if you have a situation where you have someone that wants to have workers come in, they say that, we're going to only pay these guys, $5 an hour minimum wage or whatever.
You can't go down to Orchard Supply and hire people out of the parking lot for $5 an hour. Did you know that?
Well, I know. Here's my point. Asking for these higher wages now.
Of course they're asking for higher wages, and they're getting them, too, because they understand that they don't have to work for $5. Nobody is working for $5 an hour. Nobody.
But I want to talk real quick
about... You can't get a kid to mow your damn lawn for $5.
Yeah, I want to talk real quick about what my concern about the borders and terrorists coming across, though, because I heard a talk... I think it was a guy from the group called FAIR, the immigration reform group, and he said that they had gone down to some of the people from his group had gone down to some of the areas where there's high border crossing, and they were seeing things down there like copies of the Quran and prayer rugs, which had somehow the assumption is that they had been dropped accidentally when people were hurrying across. And, if they're seeing signs of that, that's a pretty good indicator that there's...
At that point, somebody ought to pick up the phone, call the FBI, and tell them, hey, you got a job to do.
The other issue is Canada, the border with Canada is a concern, too, because my understanding is they let all sorts of people come in from, Middle Eastern countries that... and they didn't really do any background screening or anything on these people. So there's a problem there that those people could come in...
No,
not to mention the talk about bringing a bunch of people in from Iraq now.
The idea of being a little more careful about who we let into the country, I mean, that's not controversial. I agree with you. I think any reasonable person would. I would remind you that the people who did 9/11 didn't come through Mexico or Canada. We let them in directly.
Yeah, but we got to turn off the magnet for illegal aliens. I somewhat
okay.
agree with you that the
NATO
approach is of just building a wall is not going to do it.
There I got a problem. I'll tell you how we turn off the magnet for aliens. It's easy. All we have to do is turn the clock back to 1933. If we have 20% unemployment in this country and there are no jobs, nobody's going to be coming here. That's how you do it.
We need to crack down on the employers who are hiring these people. We need to make sure we have to put a system in place where they need to verify.
Are you willing to start paying the prices for goods that we're going to have to pay?
Yes.
Going to be difficult for me because I don't make that much money.
I've even heard Democrats like Tom Hartman talk about this, that the cost of labor increase, when you factor that in with products and all that, is not going to cause $10 strawberries. I mean, you may see prices go up 5-10% or something like that, but it's not going to be this ominous doubling or tripling of prices.
Well, I'll tell you what. I see that this is something that it's really a job for Congress. And by that, I mean people from both sides of the aisle, people from all various interests, et cetera, to get together and hammer out all the various things. There's points to be made on just about every side of this issue. Anybody who says we need to increase border security, I'm on board.
Yeah.
I know that. There's no disagreement coming from me. I also believe that we need guest workers. They do help hold our wages at a reasonable level and keep costs and inflation down. On the other hand, I don't want to see skilled American workers put out of the market by people who don't know what they're doing. And a lot of the people who are coming in aren't that skilled. We know that. On the other hand, they acquire those skills, and as they do, they can increase the price that they demand for their labor.
Well,
but I'll tell you what, I'm going to have to move on to my next caller. I got a whole bunch of people on the line. But I want to thank you for raising these issues. This is going to get more people thinking about more of this and make people a little bit less obdurate about taking just one approach.
I hope so.
To immigration.
We really need to do something about this illegal alien problem. I'm much more concerned about that than all the stuff going on in Iraq, because I think that's really going to impact us in the long run.
Yeah, it's a lot closer to home, that's for sure.
That's right. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call, Thor. Okay, we got a few minutes left in this hour. We're going to just keep on with these phone calls. Bob in Santa Cruz, thank you for calling KSCO. Good morning.
Hey, I wonder if Bush is still getting his every Monday morning calls from Mike Haggard.
Who's that?
The Colorado Springs evangelist. You ever seen the movie Jesus Camp?
Heard about it. It was reviewed in the San Francisco Chronicle.
Oh, it's hysterical. It's great.
That's what the reviewer said. The reviewer said it was put together by some mad anti-Bush, anti-Christian person.
I would check it out. But
it was kind of a Michael Moore hit job.
One of the things that came across was that Bush would get a Monday morning call from this evangelist in Colorado.
Would then tell him what to do?
Well, who would then tell him that he's on track with Jesus, I'm sure.
Crap.
Let's assume. Anyhow, I think Nancy Pelosi is a big deal in that she is second in line to the presidency, first woman to achieve that level.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's part of the history that you were relating earlier. It's still a big deal. It will be a big, big deal when a woman becomes president, when that happens.
I agree with that.
And the same, I think, with Nancy, and she may be overplaying it. Who knows? I think what they are going to do in the, 110th Congress? Which one is this?
110th is correct.
Yeah, okay. They're going to have hearings. I think there's no question about that. And the hearings are going to put forth before the American people a lot of details that they may not want so officially dinned in. About the conduct of the war, going back to how the war was launched. What I think when you talk about victory and defeat in Iraq,
mm-hmm.
A favorable, stable government, favorable, i.e., to the West, to the United States in mm-hmm. particular, that would be how I think that would be, in my opinion, an honest definition of victory.
I'm willing to accept that.
Favorable,
we can go on from there.
Okay, and your callers have been all very brilliant. We are occupying. But I think what the reality is, if we do want a favorable, stable government, is we engage the regional powers. We engage Syria. and we figure out how to engage Iran without completely looking like patsies. Okay.
Now, you just added a very reasonable caveat there, and frankly, that caveat seems to me to make it impossible. How do we engage them? In the meantime, they're developing nuclear weapons.
The president
of Iran is going around saying that the Holocaust never happened.
That's right.
And that he wants to drive every Jew into the Mediterranean Sea.
Good fear.
Chamberlain talked with Hitler, and look where
Stalin,
it got him.
Stalin was not exactly the coolest guy to hit the planet, right?
We allied ourselves with him in order to face a greater threat.
All right. So I think what we do is what we have done since World War II, is that we pull up with a truckload of money and pay off the inner circle. I think that's what we do. And then we, to the best of our 21st century ability, distance ourselves from how they implement what we want, which is going to be their, if you look at Syria, I mean, they're going to, if you really want to stop the influx of weaponry and underground talent, if you will, to Iraq, well, they just shoot people, and they create enough terror within their own country.
You see, you're
that it chills things out, and I think the same thing with Iran.
Nope.
If we want that kind of a victory, right, in Iraq, and my sense is, hey, how many bases do we have there, Charlie? 14, 18, you know, major air bases
in Iraq.
Yeah.
No.
What
way.
Do we have? We have a significant number of major air bases in Iraq.
We don't.
We're not going anywhere. I think that yes, we ought to reduce the troop count, but the only way to do that without a Vietnam ending is we engage the regional powers, in my opinion, today.
And you think that's possible, and that they would work in our behalf? I don't see it happening.
You've
got to bear in mind that. Hang on a second. You've been talking. Let me talk for a moment.
Go ahead.
The Syrians in particular, you gave a rather apt description of the way they conduct themselves. Syria is still under Ba'ath Party administration.
That's right.
And,
I'm not denying that.
And that's, kind of like expecting Mussolini to help you out in dealing with Hitler.
I think truckloads of money. I think what we've done, I think this is what, if we want so-called victory in Iraq, that's how it's going to be accomplished. It's going to be accomplished by engaging the regional powers. We're not going to have a draft. These guys that are going to Iraq, these young men and women who are doing second and third tours, when this stuff starts to come out, and I'm not saying it hasn't come out, but when it starts to come out in the dinning way that hearings do in the spring, okay, I think people are going to get sick of this whole trip in Iraq. And so we're left with a couple of options. We blow the country to kingdom come.
I don't think anybody's recommending that. I don't think anybody wants that.
Or we engage the regional powers, or we accept the Vietnam outcome.
Well, if you're talking about the Vietnam outcome that we had in 73 when we signed the Paris Peace Accords, I'd be willing to take that. Listen, I got to get going. We're coming up to the hour. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. That's Bob in Santa Cruz. Call KSCO today. This is KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Charles Friedman, sitting in for MZ today on the Saturday special. And we are halfway through the program. I'll be back with you in a few minutes. If you're on the phone, stay there. And if you're not, it's 479-1080.
Fox News Radio, I'm Rod Fritz. An avalanche in the Colorado Mountains.
State police have confirmed that there has been an avalanche that has occurred on U.S. 40 at the Berthoud Pass. This is approximately 60 miles west of Denver. Up to four cars may be buried, definitely injuries to the occupants. We had CPR in progress on at least one person.
Gina Michaels, traffic reporter for Fox News Radio affiliate KOA in Denver. There are witnesses who say this is the worst avalanche they have ever seen, with reports of some cars being pushed over the edge. It's just the latest in the wild weather that has hit this country from coast to coast. Denver with 8 inches of new snow, thousands of head of cattle still stranded on the plains. In Kansas, power is out for 60,000 people. In California, 80-mile-an-hour Santa Ana winds reportedly blamed on the death of two people. While all along the East Coast, record-high temperatures have again folks with spring fever. cleaning up the neighborhood. Word that Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki will send in Iraqi forces to take control from militias and other sectarian killers.
The campaign is similar to a drive last fall, which left several neighborhoods safe after squeezing out the gunmen. But many of Baghdad's troublemakers are members of a Shia militia which runs death squads, and the government here said to oppose a crackdown on that group, leaving some here to wonder how effective the cleanup will be.
Fox News Radio's Alistair Wanklin. In Baghdad today, the bodies of 80 people found not far from the heavily fortified Green Zone, all showing signs of torture. Funeral underway in Fort Worth, Texas. Denver Broncos cornerback Darrett Williams killed in a drive-by shooting New Year's Day. Thousands filed past his casket last night. Police in Denver say they have a person of interest in custody, but no charges. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. Hertenu oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Recapping our top story, Colorado highway officials say a huge avalanche has buried several cars, sent others over the edge on U.S. 40 in Berthoud Pass. Details still developing, but crews say it's the largest avalanche they've ever seen. It took three paths. At least six people rescued at the site some 60 miles west of Denver. Berthoud Pass, the main route to Winter Park, which is one of Colorado's largest ski areas. President Bush, in his weekly radio address, asking members of the new Democrat-controlled Congress to help cut government spending.
I appreciate Democratic leaders who have pledged to maintain our current levels of spending without additional earmarks this year. And I support the temporary moratorium on all new earmarks announced by the Democrats.
The Democratic response from Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada. He cut to the chase, criticizing the president over reports that he wants to send more American troops to Iraq.
Rather than deploying additional forces to Iraq, we hope the president will make clear to the Iraqi government that the time has come for them to assume more responsibility for the future, and that he will announce he's beginning the phased redeployment of our forces in the next 4 to 6 months.
A big comeback for 76ers coach Larry Brown. He's returning to that Philadelphia team.
Larry Brown returning to the Philadelphia 76ers as an executive vice president, nearly 6 years after leading the team to the NBA Finals. Brown, who's coached several NBA and college teams, has been out of basketball since getting fired in June after his only season with the Knicks. While coaching the 76ers, Brown clashed with star guard Allen Iverson a number of times, but the two did manage to work together. Iverson was traded to the Denver Nuggets last month. He says Brown's return was a, quote, good move. Mary Riegel, Fox News Radio.
A bit of a pickle for the Democrats in 2008. Which city will get the national convention? Will it be Denver or will it be New York City? I'm Rod Fritz, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us here at AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather forecast for today, Saturday, January 6th, 2007. Today you can expect lots of sunshine with highs around 60 degrees. Wind should be north-northwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight will be mainly clear with lows around 40 degrees, winds light and variable. Tomorrow will be mainly sunny with highs around 65 degrees. Tomorrow night clear with lows around 40 degrees. There is a small craft advisory in effect now throughout this evening out there on the bay. You can also expect northwest winds 5 to 15 knots with wind gusts up to 25 knots, wind waves 1 to 3 feet, and a northwest swell 7 to 12 feet at 14 seconds. The temperature here at the station is 56 degrees, and it's time to take you back to the Saturday special. Filling in for MZ is Charlie Friedman.
Yes, and that tranquil opening fits this program about the way a fish fits a bicycle. Today we've got some really good callers, though, and if we have a second hour as good as the first hour, I'm going to be a happy boy.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really got to go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
Hour two of today's Saturday special, and we're talking about Iraq and immigration. We've had a lot of callers so far. I've still got two people on the line who've been quite patient. We're going to take their calls next, and then we'll be hearing from you, I hope. 479-1080 is the telephone number. A couple of quick notes before we move on. We had a fax from Steve in Watsonville. Said it was interesting that Larry would say Iraq was no threat to us because they had no effective Air Force or Navy. What Air Force and Navy did landlocked Afghanistan have before the 9/11 attack? It's a very good point. There, you know, no one ever, you know, he mentioned Congressman Ron Paul of Texas, who's a Republican, who's a libertarian. I have a lot of respect for Ron Paul, so I'm glad to have him quoted on the show. But the fact is that Saddam did not need an Air Force or Navy in order to pose a threat to us. He posed a threat through his activities with international terrorism. And again, although he was not connected with 9/11, he was up to his eyebrows in international terror. The other day, Saddam Hussein was hanged. Frankly, I was very glad to see that happen. There's a piece in the Chronicle today that just upsets the daylights out. It says, well, because Saddam went to the gallows with a certain degree of dignity, now everyone's willing to forgive him for all of the things he did in the past. Well, if that's the case, then I guess Hitler made a terrible mistake by committing suicide in the bunkers. What he should have done was gone to the gallows with dignity and suddenly revive everybody's respect for Nazi atrocity. Anybody out there who gets the idea that Saddam Hussein is anything other than an international scumbag, well, I'm sorry. Just as much of one as Stalin ever was. And yes, we were allied with him at one time, too. Politics really does make strange bedfellows. One further note. One of our last callers mentioned there are going to be hearings in this next Congress, this Democratic Congress. We had a couple of people talk about impeachment of the president for bribery, et cetera, et cetera. Frankly, I don't believe that Mr. Bush or any of his people are guilty of any transgressions of this nature. If it develops that they are, that's a different matter. But I would hate to see hearings degenerate into the same kind of witch hunt that we had back in the 1920s when we had one senator guilty of duplicity and misconduct in the Teapot Dome scandal, and they wound up trying to tar half the Harding administration with it. So you can only chase this scandal stuff so far, and empowerment through scandal is something that I tend to shy away from. Now, having made those brief points, we get back to the telephones. Margaret, you have been remarkably patient. I want to thank you for it, and welcome to KSCO.
Hi, thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I'm going to make some, you know, hits here and then let you go real quick. But a couple things. I think Saddam, you know, now that he's gone, he went to the gallows. But he went to the gallows with a wealth of information. And I just wish that, you know, rather than, you know, killing everybody so quickly with the death penalty, I wish they'd rather just torture them and get some information out of them first.
That's an interesting thought.
Have evaluations, you know, psychological evaluations, see how psychopaths like this really operate and what they know.
Well, first of all, bear one thing in mind. It wasn't our call to make.
I know.
The Iraqi government decided, as a matter of fact, we were, you know, I guess the United States actually urged them to put it off, and they said, nuts, we're not going to do that. What information did Saddam have that you think would be interesting?
Well, I actually believe that we attacked because Saddam snubbed the UN under the Clinton administration, and the world went into this war. I mean, some 69 countries, was it? I forget.
The people who say that Mr. Bush did this all by himself simply are not being serious.
Well, Bush and the 99.99% of the Senate that approved the Iraq war inherited a corrupted Clinton CIA that basically now it comes to kind of sound like they suckered, you know, the world in the name of ego, bureaucracy, and political sludge. But it still goes that I believe that the weapons of mass destruction have been moved. They gave Saddam plenty of little warnings. Here we come.
Oh, yeah, it was not like all of a sudden. Yeah, they knew we were coming. I mean, there's no question about that.
They moved. removed them. And unlike, you know, I mean, anytime you give somebody a warning, you know, you tell a kid, I'm coming in your room, see if it's clear, if you got any drugs,
right, exactly.
And then you're going to clean it up.
Well, okay, Margaret, you've made one really good point here. And earlier today, there was somebody calling and saying, well, what about the WMDs? Of course there were weapons of mass destruction.
And of course they were moved.
And of course, this is the question that nobody seems to be interested in asking. They all, oh, well, why weren't they there? Well, because somebody moved them, fool. And what I'd like to know is, where did they go? That's right. The question I want answered.
And with this corrupt CIA, who knows where they are? The CIA probably has them by now. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
You've used the word corrupt in conjunction with the CIA. Now, I know that when Mr. Bush took office, he continued in office Mr. Clinton's CIA director. Now, are you saying that that CIA director was corrupt, or are you saying he was incompetent? There's a big difference.
Both. All of them. It's just a sick, dysfunctional business.
Given that, why do you think Mr. Bush presented a Presidential Medal of Freedom to the ex-CIA director when he stepped down?
Because we have freed Iraq. They deserved that, no doubt about that. But may I say another thing?
Oh, certainly. Please, Margaret. Go ahead.
Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
So she moderates the meetings, if you will. Whoop-dee-doo. Condoleezza Rice smokes her 100 times for achieving political fame. There is no comparison, bar none. Condoleezza Rice, she's female, she's black, she's single, she's a Christian. She's Condoleezza Rice. She's the female that rules.
Let's hit those a bit. First
Come
of all,
on.
Condi Rice. Okay, well, Pelosi's a Christian, too, so there you're, you're 50-50.
Nancy Pelosi.
Hold on a second. Margaret, hold it. You had your say. Now let me talk for a few moments. One other place that you didn't mention. Nancy Pelosi, I mean, don't belittle her accomplishment. She's Speaker of the House. That's very
whoop-dee-doo.
Important. Now, hold on a second. I'm sorry, Margaret. It's not whoop-dee-doo. It's very important. On the other hand, if you are interested, as you seem to be, in belittling the one at the to the benefit of the other, then you're forgetting one of the most important things. Nancy Pelosi is the daughter of a very prominent Democratic political family back in Maryland. Her father was a member of Congress and was mayor of Baltimore. Condi Rice, her parents were sharecroppers.
Which makes her even more.
So now this is one thing. Nancy Pelosi started out with a certain amount of, you know, push behind her just because of her family and their position, etc. Mm-hmm. Condi Rice has done it all on her own.
You bet.
So this is one thing you want. But on the other hand, I would urge you not to just belittle Nancy Pelosi. She's a very bright woman. She's accomplished a lot, and she deserves some respect.
Look,
come on.
She's a speaker. You know what? Her becoming president is like Fergie becoming Queen of England.
Nancy,
it is such a long shot.
Nancy Pelosi is not even going to run for president.
I know, but they say she's third up for president.
No, you don't understand. Margaret, you don't understand.
I do understand.
The next person after the vice president.
Exactly.
And if the president and vice president are both out of the way, then the Speaker of the House becomes president. So it's not a matter of her being elected. It's a matter of succession.
But it's a long shot, okay?
It's never happened.
No, and it never will.
Probably not.
It actually is a subconscious brain cramp to squeeze Hillary in as a president, who is also a partial birth abortion and a cheating husband monster lover.
Margaret, tell me something. What did you have for breakfast today?
I haven't had breakfast yet.
It shows. Have yourself a couple of nice strips of bacon and a little bit of scrambled egg or something like that, and you'll feel better.
I'm
gracious. You know, the heck of it is, it sounds to me, you and I probably come from the same part of the ballpark. I'd rather see Bozo Clown in the White House than Hillary. But, when you go up against these people, you can't do it with so much venom and bile. You've got to do it
are venomous and vile. Nancy the Nasty.
Just because they're that way doesn't give us any right, reason, or logic to be that way. You catch more flies.
I'm entitled to my opinions. She is a partial birth abortion advocate, and she's nasty.
Oh, you're in time.
Condoleezza Rice is a beautiful woman, and she has done 100 times more for women in this country than this Nancy is ever going to do.
Margaret, I got to move on, but I want to thank you for calling. Margaret, I'm glad you called KSCO, but all I was saying to you, I'm not saying you can't have your opinions. We all can. This is a free country. But I'm trying to tell you, there are attractive and unattractive ways of putting your opinions. And in order, and I'm trying to help you here, I'm trying to give you what we call constructive criticism. Constructive, meaning it's positive. What I would urge you to do, think about what you're saying and try to couch it in a more positive or attractive way rather than purposely seeming to be pushing everybody away. The idea in American politics is to try to bring people in, to try to gather support. And that's the nature of the beast. Okay, we're going to move on to our next phone call. This is Brother Darrell, and thank you, sir, for calling KSCO this morning.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi there.
I have several things on the Iran and Iraq situation. And one of them, I wanted to say to Harold and the rest of them who called in with so much passion, that passion doesn't mean you're right. It just means you're passionate. And these strident calls for Bush's head one way or either through impeachment or any other means is impassioned, but it isn't necessarily true, the things they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that on Iraq that, along with Saddam Hussein supporting terrorism, being a threat through that angle, his treaty violations, his aggressions against Kuwait and even Iran, all the things that he had done set him up for this being attacked by us. In a matter of self-defense, really. Now, what no one really seems to be talking about is what are we going to do about Iran? Iran is over there arming with nuclear weapons, has crazy people in its leadership who are threatening other people with nuclear destruction.
Yeah, this guy, Ahmadinejad, is really a piece of work. But you got to bear in mind, he is not the real head man there.
It doesn't matter. There's all those that are also in leadership, the Ayatollahs and all the rest of them.
Yeah, he speaks for them.
They're all nuts.
He speaks for them. Yeah, I agree with you. You can judge them by what you hear out of Ahmadinejad.
So what we have to do, either we're going to do something about Iran or the Israelis will. And if the Israelis do it, it could very well lead to a area-wide war. Now, I believe one of the things that Bush has done that he hasn't talked about, because I think it would be destabilizing of his effort, is to fight a proxy war in Iraq with the purpose of setting up a prosperous Western-style country, Muslim country, in Iraq with the purpose of causing a revolution in Iran. And if we do that, if we're successful in getting the young people in Iran to overthrow the crazy people that are in charge of that country now, we'll have done a great thing without firing a shot.
Do you believe this is feasible?
Yes, I do. And I think this is the most bloodless way to do it. But this way is certainly the best way. In Iraq, Iran has been sending proxy fighters into Iraq all the time.
Oh, if you had a change of administration in Iran, the situation in Iraq would become much more tractable overnight. I agree with you completely.
Absolutely right.
All I'm asking you, now, I've understood exactly what you're calling for. You're calling for a bloodless coup, essentially, with American assistance, but not us doing it, us assisting and facilitating the Iranians doing it.
That's correct.
But when I asked you if this was feasible, do you honestly think that this is within the realm of reasonable possibility?
Absolutely.
And how would you go about it?
I would point to two examples. It was the revolution that overthrew the Shah was, for the most part, bloodless. And the way the Soviets fell was essentially a bloodless situation
The way who fell?
The Soviet Union.
Oh, the Soviet, I'm sorry.
So I would say that, yes, a bloodless revolution in Iraq, in Iran, is possible. But what we first have to do is have a stable Iraq. And to do that, what I would do, if you're going to surge people in there to make that, you got to do in Iraq what we should be doing in the United States, and that is you've got to have secured borders. And what they ought to do with a surge is absolutely seal that border between the crazy people in Syria and the crazy people in Iran who are sending soldiers in on opposite sides to fight it out in Iraq. We need to secure those borders, and that would go a long ways to supporting a free Iraq.
You know, the The strategy that I see being talked about in the administration is not the same as the one that you're discussing. Rather, let me address it. You're calling for first border security. What they're calling for is first clampdown in Baghdad. Win the security situation in Baghdad. The idea being that if you do that, I mean, right now the very insecurity, the very fact that the insurrectionists are able to do basically what they want to do, serves as a magnet for more of them to come in.
Well,
the idea being, if we were to exercise the proper measures and clamp down in Baghdad and in Anbar province, that this magnet of social instability that exists would disappear, and your border problem would be much less acute.
Charlie, the only thing I've said to that is Baghdad is where the two sides meet. Okay, that's where the Shias and the Sunnis meet, is in Baghdad.
I agree.
Basra in the area in the south is almost all Shiite, and the other parts, over there in the western desert, is almost all Sunni.
That's
so
right.
Where they come together is in that a Sunni triangle, the Baghdad area. That's why we're having the problem there. But what needs to solve the trouble in Baghdad are the Iraqis. That's where the Iraqi police, the Iraqi army, should take control of Baghdad. We need to take control of the borders so the two opposing sides can't send their proxies in to fight in Iraq.
The Iraqis aren't ready to do that yet.
Well, they're going to have to, like you said about Vietnam as an option, that certainly is an option. Defeat is an option. And what the Democrats did to us in Vietnam was to steal the defeat from the jaws of victory.
That's a very apt phrase. Yes, that's precisely what happened.
And they could do the same thing, and I'm afraid they will here, but the consequences here are
far greater.
A little bit different than
far
they were in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, in that instance, what happened was, we lost Vietnam. We also lost Laos and Cambodia. And
yes,
that's as far as it went. I mean, there were a lot of people who were predicting, oh, well, Thailand will go. Well, Thailand did not go.
Burma nearly did. Burma is pretty socialist.
Burma is an atrocity. It's not only socialist, it's vicious.
Yeah, there was several revolutions going on constantly in Burma. So it wasn't completely wrong when he talked about the domino theory. It's true one domino didn't fall, and a very important one, but three of them did.
But the thing is, in the Middle East, around Iraq, that would be a lot more severe.
Yes, it would. And the other thing is just as defeat is an option in Iraq as it was in Vietnam, so is secure borders or a wall an option. You may not like the option, but like the old saying says, good fences make good neighbors. And the only way we can secure our border with Mexico or we can secure our border in Iraq is to have clearly marked borders and defended borders. Anything else, and now if you want to talk about immigration and say let's let X number of people in from whatever part of the world you want to let them in from, I'm not against immigration. What I'm against is absolutely uncontrolled and the feeling on the part of many from Mexico that California and, in the southwest of the United States is Mexico's anyway, and they're taking it back. I don't hear that coming from Pakistanis or Indians or Chinese or anybody else that are immigrating into this country, but I do hear it from Mexicans, which makes me a little bit nervous.
I hear it from a tiny number of them, and, they're living in a dream world. But I'll tell you what, we do have a couple of other callers on the line who want to talk about immigration, so I'm going to move on to them, too. But go ahead.
No, that's okay. I just was tying the two together, thank you very much.
It makes good sense. Thanks a lot, Daryl. I appreciate it. Daryl called KSCO this morning. Let's see. So did Mark in Watsonville. Mark, thank you for calling KSCO. Hello, Mark. You there? I think we lost Mark. Mark, if you want to call back, you're more than welcome to do so, and we'll take your call. We're going to move on to Betty and Salinas. We do have open lines on the radio program. This is the first time in over an hour that this has been the case, so if you want to call in, it's 479-1080. Betty, thank you for calling KSCO.
Hi.
Yes, you're on the air. Please go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to talk about immigration a little bit. I think we have to do some things. Number one, we have to build a fence, and we have to stop all immigration. That's from north, south, east, and west, and above, however they get here, for 5 years, until we can get our country back to what it used to be like. We would like to know that. And then we have to send home 10 million back to Mexico, and then we'll save billions and billions every month in taxes. We have to send all the criminals back. We don't need to support them. Go to jail sometimes. Every one of those little guys in an orange suit is a Mexican.
Well, so far you've come up with one point I agree with, and that is if people come here from other countries and then indulge in criminal acts, I don't see any reason why we should put up with that or why we should house them. I've called for a guest worker program, and the word guest has certain implications. If you're a guest somewhere, you're required to behave in a certain fashion. If you have a guest in your house, you don't expect that person to start destroying things or stealing things or anything like that. And if a guest in your house begins to behave in such a fashion, well, of course, you ask that person to leave. You throw them out is what you do. And that is what I think we need to do with people who have come here and abuse this country and abuse their privileges as a guest. If you're here illegally, then yeah, I'm perfectly in tune with the idea that
they're all here illegally.
No, they are not all here illegally. That you've got to get over that, Betty. That's not true.
Everyone who is not a citizen is here illegally.
No, that's not true.
Oh, I'd have to see some papers on them then. Of course, they can get any of the papers they want.
Well,
they're told where to go to get a Social Security number.
There are plenty of people
to get welfare.
You've heard the concept. You've heard the term resident alien. It goes back a long way. Okay.
No.
A resident alien is someone who is here legally on a visa, on a passport, with the knowledge of the government, but is not a U.S. citizen.
I'd have to see that, and I haven't seen any.
Okay. Have you heard the term green card?
Yeah, because one of the guys across the street, he must be an absolute, the only one that plays by the rules. He's back in Mexico for 6 months trying to get his green card fixed up.
Well,
You don't know how many around here.
Okay, well, look, I live in Watsonville, you live in Salinas. Granted, there are illegals around, but please, please, please don't get the idea that every time you see somebody with a brown face, that person is an illegal alien. It just isn't true.
Well, that just isn't true, and I don't want to argue with you about anything. I wanted to tell you a few more things.
Yes.
And we've got to stop this idea that when your baby's born here, the baby becomes a citizen. No country in the world does that, okay? And it's got to be, when it stops, it's got to be made retroactive about 10 years. So we're going to save billions of dollars when we send home 10 million of these illegals.
What are you going to do to fill the jobs that they do?
Well, they're probably going to hire some white men. I actually saw a white man on FedEx come up to my door the other day. It's the first one I've seen in years. I didn't want to let him go. I saw a white man in the post office yesterday.
Did you offer him
a lengthy conversation.
Did you give him a beer, for God's sake?
Of course not. I don't drink.
Oh, not for you, for him.
No, I don't contribute to the delinquency of minors. He was a young man.
Oh, was he underage? Oh, I didn't realize that.
He was a young man.
I'm sorry.
He was a young man.
Didn't realize that.
Okay, now, if they think they own this country, any part of it, and we have to give it back to them, then we'll have to give New England back to the English. We'll have to give the Louisiana Purchase back to France. We'll have to give Alaska back to, would we buy that from the Russians?
Yep.
I don't know. So, you see, this doesn't make sense. Somebody needs to pound into their ugly little heads that they don't own this country. We bought it fair and square. I think it was Calvin Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge said, "Patriot is a person who takes care of his country so he'll be taken care of." And we're not taking care of our country. We're not doing it at all.
Well,
and
Betty,
it's up
I'm,
to us.
I'm
passionate too, but
you're,
I
you're
have
passionate,
a point.
But I'll tell you what, I really wish that you would be just a little bit more even-handed in your attitude towards.
I can't. My state is ruined.
No, it is not.
Yes, it is.
Well, maybe your state is, but mine isn't.
I just talked to someone on the phone that says I have to go to college to learn a second language. I said, "What for?" He said, "So I can get a job." In California, you have to speak Spanish to get a job. This country, this state is ruined. And look what Schwarzenegger just did. Boy, talk about liberals. Well, I've got to go. I have things to do. And thanks for airing this, because there are still a lot of people sitting here thinking that everything's okay.
You're welcome, Betty. Thank you for calling KSCO.
You betcha.
Have a good day. Happy New Year. Oh, gracious golly. I mean, I don't want to pound anything into anybody's ugly little head. That kind of phraseology just bothers me. On the other hand, the point she was making at the time that, you know, anybody who thinks that the Southwest belongs to Mexico, well, of course, that's bananas. That's called, incidentally, Betty, if you're still listening, there's a name for that. It's called Aztlan, A-Z-T-L-A-N. And I spell it I-D-I-O-C-Y, idiocy, because it is idiocy to think that California or any part of the Southwest is not United States territory, and that somehow by recolonizing it, it's going to go back to Mexico. That's utter nonsense. Digress for a second. When I was teaching the other day, I ran into a guy. Name's Eric. Eric is was born in Watsonville. He's Hispanic, so he's a U.S. citizen. But he actually told me that he feels that the reason Mexico is so poor is because it's overpopulated. And that's why people are coming here. Now, I don't know who told him this. Mexico is a country of, what, at least 1.5 million square miles. Has 100 million people in it. Japan is a country of about 144,000 square miles, a little smaller than the state of California. Japan also has 100 million people in it. So Japan has a far higher population density than Mexico, far more, quote, overpopulated, unquote. But somehow the Japanese, through the way they've organized their society, have succeeded in creating the world's second largest economy, raising their nation to first world status in terms of education, in terms of standard of living, etc., etc. For Mexico, with the tremendous resources and wealth that that country has, to remain mired in the kind of situation it is in, is on the one hand almost incomprehensible and on the other hand absolutely revolting. But as I said earlier, I don't see anything changing. Mexico is and will remain a toilet. Downtown Al in Santa Cruz, welcome to KSCO. Thank you for calling the radio station.
Hello, Mr. Friedman. I really need to take you to task for your stand on this immigration thing.
In what way? Am I being too liberal or too conservative?
I think you're being way too liberal. And I think
what would you like?
Consider myself liberal about a lot of stuff. But have you ever been to an immigration or anti-immigration rally?
No, I don't go to rallies.
Okay. Well, it's very instructive because I went to one in Southern California at one point. And, you know, for you to say, I would agree with you that most illegal aliens that are up here are not here to necessarily take back the Southwest.
No, there's a tiny number of loudmouths
okay.
who come up with that.
Yeah,
and it's silly.
Let me finish.
Yeah.
How many people were involved in the American Revolution? There's different estimates, about 15%. Some people say as low as 5%.
John Adams said, I'm just reading his biography, he said that a third of the people were for it, a third of the people were against it, and a third of the people didn't really care.
Okay. Well, some people have estimated even lower, okay? And my point is they're very well financed at these rallies, okay? The anti-immigration people, such as myself, which is a very mixed racial crowd. There were a lot of black Americans. There were a lot of Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of, Caucasians of all sorts of different mixes.
Oh,
and there were actually a fair amount of Asians.
There are plenty of people of all colors who are very concerned.
Exactly.
I agree with
you. And on the other side are all these screaming people who are very well financed with professionally printed fabric banners. I mean, they're huge. I mean, if you've ever purchased banners, that stuff is not cheap.
Right.
Okay.
It's true.
There's plenty of like communist organizations involved in this. They've all got PA systems. They're bussed in. The Mexican radio station showed up to cover this sort of stuff. The Mexican language TV station showed up.
Al, I'm under no illusions. I understand what you're saying.
You are under illusions.
I agree with
a lot of people do not want to take this country back. Now, some of these are, you know, the educated ones that have had a certain amount of education and are very politically active. But, you know, they are starting to bring in a lot of other people who maybe just came here looking for a better life. And these people are very well organized, and it is a threat. Now, it may not be a threat immediately. I mean, in our modern times, things are accelerated. But, you know, 50 years down the road, 100 years down the road, it will have an effect. Especially as we have our English language eroded in this country. And people need to be aware of this because it is a threat. And, you know, they need to avoid the racism involved because, you know, we're denying people from India and plenty of other deserving countries where they suffer under extreme poverty conditions.
Well,
why should Mexicans have this right to come in here in these large numbers?
Let's talk about a couple of things we can agree on. First of all, you mentioned the English language. I am very, very much opposed to the idea of, for example, election materials being available in any language other than English under any circumstances. If you cannot speak and read and write the English language, or at the very least, you know, read a ballot, you got no business voting because you can't be intelligent. You can't be informed.
Right. Now, I'm not totally against as an aide or whatever. And, you know, nonprofit societies can provide that if they want to.
If they want to, but there should be no way that you can walk into an American polling booth and get a ballot that's printed in some other language.
I agree. It's just an expense, and it sets a bad precedent.
It sets a terrible precedent, and it also, it's patronizing and insulting to Mexicans because we don't do it for Italians. We don't do it for Polish, et cetera, et cetera. So what makes Mexicans so stupid that they can't learn English? I don't believe that. As a matter of fact, I teach school, so I know better than that. I work every day. I don't speak Spanish myself. And I work every day with a hell of a lot of Hispanic kids, and I speak to them in English, and they speak to me in English, and I see them talking with their friends, and quite often they're speaking in Spanish. That's fine. But I know that they're competent in English, and that's what I care about. Furthermore, the idea of securing the borders and getting control over who comes in and who goes out of this country is, to me, not controversial. It's essential.
It's an absolute necessity, and I am so disappointed. I am not a Republican, but on 9/11, the morning of 9/11, when I was like horrified and saw those planes crash in the towers, the second thought that came into my head, I had two thoughts.
Yeah.
One was, well, maybe they'll finally do something about the borders, because that is a threat. And that never happened. The other worry I had was, oh, they're going to start cracking down on our own, groups who disagree with the way, government policies conducted in this country.
And that never happened either.
Oh, yes, it has.
No,
I believe that it has. Anyway, I just wanted to point out how this undermines the society, because a lot of people believe that, like, oh, poor Mexican guy's only making $10 an hour, okay? Well, if you go to Mexico, that $10 is worth a lot more. If you come up to work in one of the maquiladora plants, they say you make about $30 a day, okay? Now, they probably work about 6 days a week, but let's say they work five. Or let's say they work 6 days a week. Okay, that's $5 a day, okay? And that's actually an okay wage for down there, and it draws people from all over the place.
That's right.
Now, when you
compare that with $10 an hour.
You compare that with $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend who worked in a bank here, I don't know if I should say, but one of the banks here in town, and he would constantly ask his manager, is it legal for us to be doing this? Because he would have the illegals come in who cleaned houses with a stack of $60 checks every week. They would deposit in their account, and they would immediately wire it down into Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So, the joke is, when you think about all the poor Mexican guys only making $10 an hour, well, he's probably making closer to $50 or $100 an hour if he saves his money and whatever. And, the joke is on the American who's working alongside him.
Now, he's not making $50 or $100 an hour. Nobody is.
Well,
on the other hand, he's making a hell of a lot.
If you take it in terms of pesos and what he can buy in Mexico of land and other sorts of things like that, he is making a very large living compared to an American worker.
Compared to what he could make in compared to what he could make in Mexico. Yeah, there's no question about it.
Yeah, and that's
because your money goes so much further there.
And that's how people need to think about it.
Well, same thing would be true, for example, if you had your average job here and all of a sudden you're making the same money but living in Arkansas.
Exactly. Right. But that seems to, soften people's a lot of resolve about, oh, the poor guy's not making that much money. Well, if you spend some time in Mexico, you see how many California plates are down there. Certain things cost just as much in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Not everything,
things,
but certain things.
Land and whatever else and food is a lot less expensive than medical care. And, they're not bad people for the most part, but you can get medical care much more cheaply down there. And they come up there with these expectations of receiving this medical care and, overwhelm our emergency rooms.
See, this is another thing that we shouldn't permit.
Right. Now,
if somebody shows up in a hospital and they've got a legitimate health problem.
Exactly. We can't deny it. It would be totally unethical for us to deny immoral for us to deny someone medical care, no matter how they were in this country.
Yeah, you're right. You
now,
can't
if I was a Mexican and got, or if
it.
I was an American down in Mexico and got in a traffic accident, you know, it'd be great if they took care of me. Okay, so we can't do that. I think that's against our nature as Americans. So that means we need to control the people coming into the border or across the border here.
I agree with that.
So, you know, this administration and the idea of building a fence is crazy in a lot of ways. Mm. I think there's strategic areas that you can build a fence where there's just too many people coming over.
Well,
but the idea of a 700-mile fence is ridiculous.
Nobody.
They need to go after these big corporations that are hiring these people. And that's what pisses me off about the Republicans, because that, you know, on one hand, we have these Democrats that want to bring in extra votes and manipulate the system. And on the other hand, we have these Republicans that are so greedy or whatever that they will allow these corporations to destroy the integrity of this country. This really needs to change. And people should be passionate about it and definite about it and have a clear set ideas about what's going on. Anyway.
Well, Al, I'm glad you called and said it here.
Okay. Because, like
you're,
I said,
I say this. I don't
this
agree
is a
with everything.
To the integrity of this country.
I don't agree with everything you've come up with. I agree with a lot of it, but what I do respect is the fact that you've obviously thought about it. You've obviously got a coherent set of ideas, and you express them very well.
Right. And, you know, I try not to be racist about it because I've hired these people myself. Most Mexican people are very, very nice people.
We've had a couple of people today who've sounded fairly racist, and I don't like that. That bothers me. You have not done that.
Okay.
You have not done that.
But, you know, I do have concerns about, you know, it is a country that has suffered from corruption for hundreds of years. Even before the U.S. was a country, was corruption in Mexico.
It's going to continue. Mexico is and will remain a toilet. I've said it before.
And to a certain extent, it infects our country with that sort of attitude. When you look at the Latinos and how few of them participate in our political system in terms of voting and whatever else.
Oh, more and more. You see, this is the kind of thing that takes a little bit, and I underline the word a little bit of time. You look at exactly the same things that a lot of people, including you, have been saying within the last hour here. They were saying 100 years ago, only instead of Mexicans, it was Italians. Because at that time, the United States was being inundated under waves of Italian immigrants. And they arrived here. They were Catholic, not Protestant, for one thing. They look different. They're darker haired and darker complected, for another thing. They speak a different language, for another thing. They tend to be very clannish, for another thing. So you saw a lot of these parallels. But over a period of just a generation, you have Americanization of these people. And this is one of the things that I worry about today is when we print ballots in Spanish and we do other things like that, we are standing in the way of the Americanization of this particular group of immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not good.
No, it's not a good idea.
I don't care who you are or where you come from. When you come to America, you make a choice.
By coming here,
you're making a choice. You're saying, I want a new life in a new country. From now on, I'm an American. And I am willing to extend my hand to anybody from anywhere who takes that decision. I make no racial or cultural distinction. I'll tell you this. I think we're lucky that we are where we are and that the immigration we're getting is from a country like Mexico. Think of the Europeans. Where are they getting their immigrants from? They're getting their immigrants from the Muslim world.
And that was one of the things I was grateful for, that, you know, at least it's a bunch of Catholics from, you know, Mexico or whatever, and they're not bent on violence and that type of thing for the most part. They're just looking for a better life.
Exactly.
But, you know, the difference is we're
making out okay in a lot of ways.
Those Italians did not live right next door and weren't running over the border.
That is a very good point.
If you come in too fast, too many people, and move back and forth, you don't adopt the country. You don't develop an allegiance to it.
That's right.
Okay? My father's, well, on both sides, of course, but on my father's side, he came here in the 20s from Germany. And, you know, there are pictures of him in his little knickers and cap with my uncle or whatever holding American flags.
Yeah, exactly.
My grandfather selected this country because before World War I, he was in the German military in the Navy, and they sailed all around as they were becoming a military power. And he looked at different countries all around the world, and he loved America for what it was. And when he came here, that was, you know, his allegiance. He gave out free coffee and rolls from his bakery shop during the Depression. His allegiance was to this country. And, you know, my relatives fought in World War II against Germany and Japan.
This is why when I work in classrooms, I'm continually telling those classrooms full of Hispanic kids, you are Americans. I drill them into it all the time.
And you know,
most teachers don't do that, and they should.
My historical perspective is not on Germany. My historical perspective comes from England and the lineage that created America. That's what my perspective is, even though my blood may not necessarily come from there.
Well, listen, Al, I gotta let you go. I gotta move on to my next caller.
Listen, could be a little more strident about some of this stuff, I'd feel a little bit better about it.
Well, you know, I don't have to be. I get callers who'll do that.
Okay.
You see, what I try to do is I try to facilitate a radio program here, and I'm not afraid to take a position. I've taken positions on a lot of things. But basically what I want to do is I want to get callers like you to share a few minutes with us and tell us what you think and broaden the debate, and I thank you for doing it.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
That's Al in Santa Cruz. I'm late for my break. I'm going to take my break now, then we'll be with Mark in Watsonville. And other than that, we got open lines at 479-1080. I'm Charlie Friedman. This is the Saturday Special on KSCO.
KSCO and KOMY Radio is looking for an intern addition to our newsroom. The individual should be someone with an excellent command of English, both verbal and written, be flexible in the workplace, have a pleasant speaking voice, and have a good sense of humor. The position is part-time, including weekends and evenings. Apply to Rosemary Chalmers at 2300 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz, Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. KSCO and KOMY Radio are an equal opportunity employer.
Dave Allen, A Blast to the Past, Sunday afternoons at 5 p.m.
We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your strap bags up. Join me, ho.
It was a night. Ooh, what a night it was. It really was such a night.
34 wagon and we call it a Woody. Sir City, here we go.
Doolang, doolang, he's so fine.
Witchcraft. Get my drift Sunday afternoons 5 p.m. here on AM 1080 KSCO. Get with the program.
I have a secret passion. Sundays at 4 and then at 5 some more. Peeling off my persona suit, opening wide my mind, letting him take me to places only dreamed of with brilliant wit, wisdom, and wicked elan. If you dare, I'll share. Dave Allen, Sundays at 4 and at 5, some more on AM 1080, KSCO.
Your electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. Hello, I'm Priscilla Christie of Direct Electric.
And I'm Dave Christie. Whether your problem is a light switch, breaker box, meter main, or anything in between, Direct Electric technicians will fix it right the first time for the right price. And here's the best part. Direct Electric will not bill you for a service call.
I don't think they heard you, Dave. You better tell them again.
Okay. Direct Electric will not charge you for a service call.
And if you have an electrical emergency, call Direct Electric at 425-1407. I'll rouse Dave and he'll come running.
Priscilla is right. If you have a real electrical emergency, the kind that just can't wait till morning, call Direct Electric and we will come running.
Remember, your electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. I will take your call.
And I will make certain that your problem gets fixed. Call Direct Electric at 425-1407. That's 425-1407.
Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet. GotNet's been serving the Monterey Bay Area since 1994 with high-quality, affordable internet service. At GotNet, we take pride in offering a higher level of personalized service. Our customer support technicians are knowledgeable and friendly. We're here 7 days a week to serve you, from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. during the week and noon to 5 on the weekends. GotNet is ready to answer questions, solve your problems, and get you on your way. Call GotNet today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. GotNet.
And we're back on the Saturday special. I sleep a lot sitting up. This is Charlie Friedman sitting in for MZ today here at KSCO. And moving directly back to the phones, here is Mark in Watsonville. Thank you for calling KSCO.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
You know, on those of us opposed to illegal immigration, we took two big hits this week, and they're both from the Republican side. Number one, through the Freedom of Information Act, Bush was forced to explain the totalitization agreement between Social Security Administration and Mexico. And what it means is workers, citizens of Mexico, will be able to tap into our Social Security system. And unfortunately, they're going to be able to do it after just six quarters of valid work within the United States, which is 18 months. So they're also talking that they will credit those wages earned while a person was working here illegally. And all we've heard for the past 20 years is how Social Security is going bankrupt, and those of us who have paid into it all of our life will never receive our benefits. But beyond that, again, it legitimizes the illegal aliens in that they're going to be eligible for one of our government-authorized programs. And
see, this is one of the reasons why I favor going back to a bracero program or guest worker type thing, because under that, people would be able to come up for a specific length of time. I believe the Canadians have a program like this right now that's been functioning for some time. I believe they figure most of them are seasonal workers. Either.
Well, we have one here too, Charlie. It's called the H-2A visa.
Well, evidently they don't take it seriously, because the one thing that everybody agrees on is that we do not have control of the borders and that we need to establish it.
Well, they take it very seriously, and that's why they don't enforce it, because the employer has to sponsor the individual coming up. They have to house them, provide for them, and make sure they're not going to become a ward of the state, and arrange for their return.
See,
and obviously employers up here don't wish to involve themselves in that.
There's no need to do it that way.
Correct.
Under the Bracero program, that was never the way it was. People would get their permission to be in this country for a given length of time. They would come up, and they would seek work, and they would find work.
Under the Bracero program, you were sponsored by your employer, and you were also housed. I don't know if you remember in Salinas, they're gone now, the old barracks-like structures that were the farm worker housing. The large buildings were, the farm workers are housed in, and the employer provided that.
They used to provide housing for all migrant farm workers, whether they were braceros or not.
In the labor camps.
Yeah.
The other hit we took was from our governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, through the Healthy Children's Insurance Program. He states he's going to insure all residents, children of the state of California, including, he specifically stated, those who are here illegally are going to be insured under this. So again,
I'd like to see how he plans to do that.
Well,
I don't think he's going to get it through.
Well, you look at Sheila Kuehl's universal health care, SB 840 last year.
Yeah, but you got to remember, Sheila Kuehl's an outright socialist.
But it passed, and it was only vetoed by our governor. And it specifically in 840, it said all residents of California, regardless of immigration status, will be covered by the universal health care plan. So we insure the children. To me, it's sort of the camel's nose under the tent.
It's more than that.
Well, eventually, again, if you can get your body into California across the line, you will be eligible to enter our health care system, and your health care will be covered by the state of the taxpayers of the state of California. So, regardless of the economic disaster that this could be, to me, it just gives the illegals another claim that they can remain in our country, because our state and federal governments are saying, well, not only are you here, we're going to recognize you, and we're going to give you these entitlements that as the same that an American citizen or a legal resident alien would receive.
Well, Mark, I've got to agree with you twice. Once on the way, you view this, and again on the implications that you see. You and I are in the same corner. This is just not something that I'm for. On the other hand, as you pointed out, this is I don't know what the hell we're going to do about it at this late date. But I would like to see some changes there. The idea that somebody would be able to work six quarters, be a foreign national, and be eligible for Social Security is nonsense.
Well, we have that with legal resident aliens who come here, are sponsored by their families for 5 years, reach the age of 65, and then are eligible for SSI under age and disabled, and they have never paid a single quarter into our Social Security program, and then for the rest of their lives, they will be drawing out of Social Security on the SSI program. And that is, you know, hugely common.
My heavens. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
You better watch out. I've got an optimistic nature, but if you people keep up, you're going to demoralize me.
Well, what I'm stating is I think the polls state that 80% of the United States citizens want control of the border. They want the illegal alien program stopped. And at the same time, our government is stating, well, we're going to legitimize their presence in by giving them these entitlements from Social Security to health care to resident tuition for their children at our universities. It's just amazing. We're not being listened to.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out the next presidential election. Thanks a lot for calling, Mark.
Okay.
Appreciate it. That's Mark. And now we go to Mike in Santa Cruz. Mike, thank you for calling KSCO. Good morning.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi.
I really appreciate that previous caller. Earlier in the program, you were saying you didn't know anybody that was for the illegal immigration, but our own government is doing everything they can to promote the morass that we've got, as reflected in the facts that the previous caller tried to bring out.
He did bring out.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that. That's great. Yeah, there's a few things I didn't know, although I've considered myself very much aware of what's going on. But I called to talk about Iraq.
Yes, sir.
And I just wanted to say that, you know, we have no legitimate reason for being there. And we call it a war, but it was never declared a war. Okay, you know, why do you think we're there? You know, to get rid of a horrible guy like Hussein.
That's part of it. But the other part.
How many people did he kill? They were telling us something like 100,000 or so.
Oh gosh, that's you'd have to. It's like trying to guess how many people Stalin had murdered, or
how many people are dead since we went there? How many Iraqis have died?
My guess is probably fewer than would have died if Saddam had remained in power.
That's pure speculation.
Yes, sir. It is pure speculation.
Yeah, but how many have died?
I don't know the exact answer to that.
Well, it's topped 600,000. Since we invaded. And that's what it is. It's an invasion.
You haven't seen 600,000 people die in Iraq since then.
Iraqis dead.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you have
12,000 in the last year. So what you're projecting then is that the first 2 years there were something like 520,000 or something like that. Look, hold it a second. I saw the same figures you saw, and it reminded me so much of that time back in the 80s when somebody said there are 6 million homeless in the United States, and it got published everywhere and basically given credence. And a few years later, somebody said, "Where did you get that number?" And the guy said, "I made it up."
I didn't call to talk about the homeless. I called to talk about
I understand that. The figure 600,000 Iraqis dead since we overthrew Saddam Hussein is a false figure. It is a ludicrous figure. When you bear in mind that the total population of Iraq is 24 million, you are talking about 2% of the entire population being killed. That has not happened.
Whoever made
that number up made it up for the express purpose of embarrassing the Bush administration, and it has no credibility at all.
To say that Iraqis
have been killed since that invasion is true. I don't dispute that. To say this 600,000 have been killed is nuts.
Well, look for some things in your mail slot there at the station, then. I'll bring you some things. There's not enough time right now to go into it. Look at the absolute chaos that we've created there and the chaos that we've maintained.
Okay, well, what I would like to see is a surge and an end to that. I got to cut this off. I'm running late. Thanks very much for your call, Mike. I appreciate it. This is KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Charlie Friedman. This has been the Saturday Special.
That's all, folks. one of Colorado's largest ski areas, Winter Park, some cars sent over the edge. Gina Michaels of Fox Radio affiliate KOA in Denver.
Up to four cars may be buried, definitely injuries to the occupants. We had CPR in progress on at least one person.
Crews have already rescued six people. A spokeswoman for the Colorado Department of Transportation calling it the largest avalanche crews have ever seen. Denver digging out from another 8 inches of snow, the third major storm in as many weeks. A wind advisory meantime in effect in California. A dust storm kicked up by the Santa Anas, blamed for a fatal car accident in Barstow that killed a woman and a 13-year-old boy. In New York City,
love it. Stay that here all day.
A record high temperature of 70 degrees forecast for today. Some disturbing discoveries today in Iraq. Fox News Radio's Alistair Wanklin joins us live in Baghdad. Alistair?
Jane, the bodies of 71 people found dumped in Baghdad, many of them tortured, then killed. American and Iraqi soldiers are going house to house here, searching for the gunmen terrorizing the streets. Many residents blame a prominent Shia militia for the violence. Until now, the government wary of touching that group, but Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki now saying no militants are immune, and the push to clear Baghdad streets is apparently already underway. Meanwhile, Jane, news of a firefight that left 30 militants dead and several captured, including Arab fighters from outside Iraq. Jane?
Thanks, Alistair. Some disturbing news out of Fort Worth, Texas. Funeral services now underway for Denver Broncos cornerback Darrent Williams, killed in a drive-by shooting. Denver police arresting a man they want to question. Fox News Radio, Farron Balanced.
When the hurricane struck, you showed the courage to save lives. While the weather rained down, you displayed the heroism to risk it all. While thousands suffered, you exhibited the selflessness to heal others. But now that the waters have receded and the reconstruction has begun, you just may need to show the greatest strength of all, the strength to help yourself. The hurricanes have affected everyone. As a rescue worker, you were there for us. Now let us be there for you. Call 1-800-273-TALK. Trained and caring people are available to listen and to help. 1-800-TALK. The call is completely free and will always remain confidential. Sometimes the bravest thing you can do is take care of yourself. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
5 days of searching in the jungles of Indonesia, still no signs of an Atom Air Boeing 737 that disappeared from radar screens during a violent storm. U.S. aviation experts now helping to investigate, saying whatever happened to that plane, it was rapid and catastrophic. President Bush meeting with his national security team again today, ahead of Wednesday's major speech on his changing strategy for Iraq. In his weekly radio address, the president saying he's confident he'll be able to work with the new democratically controlled Congress on Iraq and other issues.
I was encouraged by our discussions, and I'm confident that we can find common ground in our efforts to serve our fellow citizens and to move our country forward.
In the Democrats' radio response, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid doesn't think sending more U.S. troops to Iraq should be part of the president's new strategy.
Based on the advice of current and former military leaders, we believe this tactic would be a serious mistake.
Democrats on Capitol Hill already unveiling a new spending plan.
The plan called Pay As You Go or PAYGO could completely change the way Congress does business. It requires that Congress cut spending if they want to cut taxes and increase taxes if they want to increase spending or simply find the money somewhere else.
Fox's Rudy Bakhtiar in Washington. You've heard of the Wonder Bra, one woman finding that body armor comes in all shapes and sizes.
She was saved by the bra strap, that is. 46-year-old Debbie Bingham's bra strap deflected a stray bullet that fell out of the sky on New Year's Eve. The Atlanta mom visiting her daughter in St. Petersburg, Florida, ringing in the new year when she felt a sharp pain in her shoulder. The bullet found halfway inside her bra. The other half broke the skin. It took 5 stitches to patch her up. Rod Fritz, Fox News Radio.
Something to celebrate in New Orleans. Saints coach Sean Payton named NFL Coach of the Year by the Associated Press and the teams in the playoffs. I'm Jane Metzler, Fox News Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us here at AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. AM 1340, KOMY Watsonville. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather forecast for today, Saturday, January 6th, 2007. It looks like today you can expect lots of sunshine. Highs should be around 60 degrees. Tonight will be mainly clear with lows around 40 degrees. Winds light and variable. There is a small craft advisory in effect now throughout this evening out there on the bay. Today out there on the bay, you can also expect northwest winds 5 to 15 knots with wind gusts up to 25 knots over the outer bay. Wind waves will be 1 to 3 feet with the northwest swell 7 to 12 feet at 14 seconds. The temperature here at the station is 60 degrees and it's time for perspectives right here on AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville.
Afternoon. You've tuned in to the Perspectives Radio Show, and this hour, the Perspectives Radio Show is going to present jury nullification, along with a limited discussion of sustainable development. Our hosts today are Michael Shaw and Roy Avila of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, who will be interviewing Elo Jones of the Fully Informed Jury Association. So what do modern law school professors and government school teachers neglect to teach? Today we're going to discuss one such crucial concept, the fact that jurors have the power and the duty to rule on the law as well as on the facts of a case. Participate in reviving the American system of justice when you sit on a jury. So hear how jury nullification is a principle of justice and one of freedom's checks and balances. A juror's recognition and exercise of this duty is essential to the maintenance of a free society. Michael and Roy, thanks for joining us today. And I believe we have our guest on.